You're listening to
Source News
on 4EB Community Radio, presented by Griffith University students.
Thanks for joining us today on the Source News. I'm Maddie.
And I'm April.
And we're bringing you hot and fresh news that's actually relevant for students by students.
First of all, let's talk the Matildas.
Great way to start things off. What a great achievement for all women in sport. With it just being announced this morning by Queensland Premier Anastasia Palaszczuk that the state government is planning to build a statue in their honour outside Suncorp Stadium in Brisbane.
That's such a great commendation to their hard work they have put in over the Women's FIFA World Cup series.
It's also great seeing the nation get behind women in sport and seeing recognition given where it's due. We're kicking off with a few feel-good stories to start this week. Over to you, April.
Heartwarming news from the United Kingdom this week. In an age where consumerism and waste are rampant, this group of volunteers is pioneering a revolutionary new way of thinking. The Repair Cafe is a group of volunteers who are dedicated to reducing waste by fixing broken items for free. The cafe's founder, Michelle Fisher, says that repairing is about much more than just fixing something. It's an act of kindness and an opportunity to connect with others. The cafe's popularity has been increasing steadily, with more and more people bringing in their items to be repaired, giving them a new life. Now let's get serious. Over to you, Maddie.
Mental health, a topic that often goes unspoken but affects so many of us. With the challenges that young men face in their mental health journey, innovative solutions have been introduced in to help combat this growing issue. With young men, it's hard to remove that stigma, but the Resilience Project is paving the way through promoting mental well-being through gratitude, empathy, and of course, resilience. Larissa Espick has the story.
Mental health is affecting more and more young men in Australia. Although society today is considered more progressive, there are still many men that are suffering in silence, unable to talk about their experiences with mental health. Liam, whose name we are keeping anonymous, is a logistics manager at a large supermarket warehouse. He spoke about his own struggles as a man in Australia and the toll his mental health has taken on him.
The biggest challenge would be the moment you open up. It's like a confliction. Where I considered myself as weak for being able to open up and not handling it myself.
This experience is not uncommon and is felt by many young Aussies. Primary school teacher Louis Scott also relates to this feeling of being unable to talk freely about his struggles.
Would be dealing with, I guess, the stigma with mental health more than anything, and I guess the kind of embarrassment maybe that it can bring. I think that, and also, when you do need help, I think you might go on a waiting list and you might need help right now, but you might not be able to see someone for a few months.
The statistics don't lie, with Beyond Blue reporting that 1 in 7 men aged 16 to 24 experience depression or anxiety each year. However, with over 30 years in public health and co-authoring 4 books, Professor Rob Moody is a distinguished health expert dedicated to helping the community. While as an advisor to the Resilience Project, provides his expertise working in the sector to offer guidance to the organisation. But how is it different? Professor Moody talks what makes the Resilience Project stand apart and how beneficial it can be for schools.
Basically, it's a program, it's not a talk. It's really about a change of the way the school works. So it's not only for students, but it's as importantly, and perhaps the main focus is for teachers and for parents as well, so that everybody is aligned in the same area. And the great thing about this program compared to many others is it's driven by educators. So it's driven not necessarily by health people, but by people that really do understand the primary and secondary school systems. And that makes, I think, an enormous difference.
Although mental health and well-being is spoken and outlined in curriculums around Australia, it is hard to guarantee that this gets transferred to the classroom, says Mr. Scott.
I don't think so. Not really. I guess it would depend school to school, but I think there's always like guidance officers and counsellors and that sort of thing, but I don't think there's anything too major. I guess maybe in some of the HP curriculum it would talk about mental health, but I wouldn't say it's a huge curriculum focus, but I guess school to school and teacher to teacher.
This is where the Resilience Project come in. They offer a data-driven program that actually works and are seeing great results, as Professor Moody explains.
The data is just showing the fact that it's through this sort of natural experiment, if you like, of COVID, that the kids in the Resilience Project, their anxiety didn't increase, their depression didn't increase, whereas it did in kids in not in the project. Also, their connection to family and to school increased rather than decreased. So quite major positive shifts compared to schools that weren't in the project. You know, very few programs have ever been shown to have such major impacts, and that's why I've been really impressed with it. I mean, even looking at issues like smoking and diet, then, you know, kids in the Resilience Project schools have done better. And that's really, really fascinating, I think. But it means that change is possible if done well.
With all the added stresses in life today, it is hard to remember to take time for yourself. We want to remind listeners that it is okay to seek help and talk about how you're feeling. If you or someone you know is struggling with mental health issues, please reach out and seek support. Remember, you are never alone.
Thanks, Larissa. We hope this story provided some resources for those who may be struggling, but also helped shed light on the importance of mental health awareness.
In other news, let's talk on the recent travel boom amongst young Australians over the past few months. It really does seem that in recent everyone's escaped the chilly winter months and headed overseas. But are these young Aussies sacrificing obtaining crucial assets by blowing their funds on these holidays? We have Madison Barton Harris with the story.
We're living in a time where young Aussies turn their savings accounts into holidays and life experiences instead. This is seen with the increased number of Gen Zers who have turned to booking flights instead of saving for a house. With statistics being revealed that over the past 3 months have seen the highest rise in flights being booked, with popular travel destinations such as Europe, America, Fiji and Bali being significantly inundated with Australian tourists. There is no doubt that the COVID-19 pandemic has been the root cause of these impacts on the current travel boom, with the average 20 to 30-year-old Australian prioritising living in the moment rather than saving for the long term. This raises the question, however, how many of our young Australians are actually still interested in potentially being a homeowner? Young Australian University student Megan Merchant speaks on why she feels the importance of travelling once graduating rather than securing a house deposit.
I mean, I'd like to say that I was a person who was saving for a house, but at the moment, because you can't actually save for a house, experiences and living life and actually being able to enjoy life is so much more important than pretty much living way below what you could be living just to afford to buy a house. That's not something that's even going to be what you want to live in. Like, it's going to be a pretty bad house if you're going to be able to afford one, especially at our age.
Confirming that the COVID-19 pandemic has in fact put a delay on Gen Zers' want to secure home ownership in their 20s. With house prices now rising too far out of reach over the last few years, it's no wonder that young Aussies are turning to travel instead. That's not all. The experts are predicting that house prices are still set to further increase over the next few years, given Brisbane's success with securing the 2032 Olympic Games. Real estate agent at RE/MAX Revolution, Nadine Noble, speaks on the impact COVID-19 has had on the real estate market.
We've seen people over COVID competing. Like, I had one property that had like 52 offers on the table against it. People just fought and it increased prices. You know, we were actually going over a really crazy price guide anyway, but people, I think the highest one we've seen was 300,000 over that guide. And it's happening at the moment as well because there's just no stock on the market.
As real estate prices are expected to further rise, choosing travel may just be the more sensible way for young Aussies to use their funds. Nadine's colleague, Lily Duick, further spoke on travelling in your 20s and why she believes that her experience in the field has swayed her to believe all young Aussies should take the opportunity to travel while they can.
Definitely. Yeah, definitely. I think it's, I mean, you can do it with your parents when you get older. I think it's also important to, like, build a like sense of independence by being able to go overseas and like do these different things by yourself or with a friend or partner. And yeah, I think traveling is very valuable. I think, you know, being stuck in one country, if you can afford to go traveling, I think it kind of builds a sense of like the world around you and doesn't just keep you isolated in one area.
Given the recent influx of Aussies abroad, prioritising travel and life experience may just be the right choice all young adults should be making. This is Madison Barton-Harris. Stay well, my friends.
Thanks to Madison for that story. It's interesting to hear the different perspectives there. It really does reiterate since COVID the importance of travelling while you're young and have the ability to.
The rental crisis has been thrown around for the past couple of years, but what does that really mean? Here's April diving into what the rental crisis means for Australians.
It's no secret that society was thrown into complete turmoil when COVID-19 left many of us unemployed, filled with fear daily, and house-ridden. Over 3 years later since the events of COVID-19 began, society is still dealing with the repercussions from cost of living prices skyrocketing and the rental crisis increasing as the days go on. So, what's exactly going on in the rental market to announce it a crisis? With the growing population and new housing not meeting these demands, this has resulted in rental prices increasing rapidly while the amount of housing available decreasing. This tedious combination has made the rental market into an extremely competitive environment. To the point, many renters are met with the choice to continue dealing with the increases in rent or to enter the competitive nature of the rental market and take the chance on not being able to find housing. Many renters are feeling the wrath of this crisis, Finn Wachtel being one of those who is able to explain his personal experience as a renter.
This has been obviously a very tricky thing to deal with as the rental market has just gone exponentially worse in the last few years. Things were perfectly fine until before COVID, but during COVID, when the floods happened in Brisbane, I received a lot of damage to my previous rental property. This caused a lot of issues, told us that they would be fixing the issues and they decided to up the rent as well, increasing the rent from initially $550 a week to up to $650 a week by the end of it over a 4-year tenancy. So probably about $50 every 6 months that they would raise the rent. Obviously, you know, working casual jobs and, you know, having, you know, not that much money due to being at uni as well. This has, you know, caused a lot of, you know, money problems with me. I initially went into that current property just because it was so cheap. But then now, obviously, this has gone up to the point where I was priced out of my area, you know, moved into a larger share house now. So that's brought the rent down a bit. But yeah, it's been very stressful and obviously has gotten worse in the last year and is continuing to get worse. My current place has increased the rent by another $50 at the moment. Even just finding a place going through the rental process has been a very stressful thing. I've never seen it this bad.
Renters aren't the only ones feeling the lash of the rental crisis. Landlords are dealing with different issues, but all in all, the same crisis is being felt from all parties. The rental market's low availability is not only from a decrease in housing being built, but also landlords pulling their properties out of the rental pool and selling up. Numerous reasons have caused this, from a history of bad tenants ruining the value of their properties, to the rising interest rates and compliance costs. Others are also seeing a spike of interest in their properties, gaining the attention of desperate renters seeking the quickest opportunity for housing to avoid the stress of the rental market. To gain a landlord's perspective, we have Tony Caruso sharing his experiences and thoughts on the rental crisis.
We haven't really been affected by the rental crisis. You know, what we have noticed is that the demand for properties is quite large. A recent property that we rented out, you know, we were quite surprised at the number of people who came to the viewings and how quickly the spots filled up for the viewings. You know, one of the things we did see were people, you know, trying to do deals on the side. So, you know, the crisis obviously means that there's less houses to rent and people are more desperate to get hold of property. So they're sort of doing, you know, trying to do everything they can to, get selected as the renter of the property.
Gaining a small insight into both sides of the rental crisis hopefully opens more conversations to how both parties can move forward and start to feel less stress about their housing situations.
The Source.
Thanks to April for giving us an insight into the personal effects the rental crisis has had. Wow, we're really talking about the aftermath of COVID today, aren't we, April?
Yeah, you're right. Here's another one to add. Since the alleviation of COVID-19 travel restrictions, universities across Australia have begun calling for expressions of interest for international travel and study opportunities for undergraduate students. The Department of Foreign Affairs has developed the new Colombo Plan Mobility Program, which provides funding to Australian universities to support Australian undergraduate students' participation in study, internships, mentorships, and research in 40 host locations across the Indo-Pacific region. With many students having embarked upon these field trips over the mid-year break, universities nationwide are being commended for providing these opportunities and the overall benefits these experiences have provided for their students. Chelsea Revisa has more.
Earlier this year, academics from the School of Social Science led 20 undergraduate students from the University of Queensland on a field trip to the Solomon Islands. This is the first time a group of undergraduate students from this field have been presented with this opportunity to study in the Solomon Islands and gain credit from this experience towards their undergraduate degree program. The two-week venture was generously funded by the Department of Foreign Affairs and Trades New Colombo Plan, NCP, Mobility Project. Social science student Erin Davenport believes her Solomon Islands undergraduate field trip experience was beyond life-changing.
I've learnt a lot more about a new culture and new way of life, but I've also become much more interested in my education and what it can do, learning more about the Solomon Islands and the people and getting to live it as well as learn about it. How do you believe that your experience on this trip will benefit you once you graduate? The experience has given me a lot more knowledge of policy and cultures, which is something that I really want to work in. I want to work in development, but also like the correct way of development without being harmful. So to see the way that the conservation people were doing it in the Solomon Islands, it's proven that you can do it right. You know, you don't have to be a negative force that's overpowering.
The Mobility Project was launched as a signature initiative of the Abbott government's foreign policy in 2014 and provides semester grants ranging from $3,000 to $7,000 and short-term grants ranging from $1,000 to $3,000. Willoughby, like Erin, was also fortunate enough to embark upon this journey and says it provided her with inspiration and insight into a range of new topics and areas she has found valuable for her future career prospects.
It's such an amazing experience. It was sort of everything that I hadn't expected, but at the same time, everything that I had hoped for.
Amazing. How do you feel this trip impacted you overall?
I think that it challenged me in a lot of different ways. It challenged my thinking about different things. It gave me insight into a lot of topics that I didn't really know that I was interested in, like the carbon market. So in that sense, it really inspired me, I think.
Yeah. Would you encourage other students to apply for these scholarships and go on these trips?
Absolutely, 100%. It was like quite literally a life-changing experience. It was really good.
The once-in-a-lifetime opportunity supports high-achieving Australian undergraduate students to study and work in the Indo-Pacific region. UQ Bachelor of Social Science student Zara feels this experience allowed her to connect with like-minded students, recognise the narratives of Indigenous people's way of life, and overall enriched her final year of her tertiary education before graduation.
This trip was my last course of my degree, so I think it was a really profound way to finish, and so it's hard to kind of know what that will mean for me next as a professional, if you will, just because, yeah, I am wrapped up my degree now, but I think stepping into the real world would be really helpful just for that empathy for the future. I'm also really hoping to go back and to do some more research and more studies. So it's definitely opened a new trajectory for me that I didn't realise was there.
Thanks to Chelsea Revisa for that report. For listeners interested, these scholarships are available to Australian university undergraduate students aged 18 to 28, and we advise you to contact your university's new Colombo Plan Scholarship Liaison Officer for more details.
For the latest around Brisbane and the Gold Coast, you're listening to The Source News on 4EB Global Digital.
Let's stick with uni news a little longer and hear a story of the past that's still as relevant as ever. Did you know the Nathan campus is part of a unique ecosystem? We're surrounded by Tuohy's Forest, which, as David Whitfield discovered, is teeming with life in the middle of suburbia.
I'm here at Nathan campus in the heart of Tuohy Forest today to find out how the animals are going while all the students are away. Tuohy Forest is a pretty unique place in Brisbane. It has an abundance of wildlife, most notably the healthy koala population here. Darren Shepherd is the principal of the Tuohy Forest Environmental Education Centre.
There is now lots of koalas here, and that's just a spectacular success, you know, to have them back, you know, because they weren't here when I arrived, that's for sure.
They weren't here?
There were no koalas here. Absolutely not.
Oh, right.
Absolutely no koalas here. So they've arrived.
And I went for a walk with Brad Lambert from the Facebook group Tuohy Forest Wildlife to find some koalas. It didn't take us long.
I mean, this time of year, they're going all over the place in different directions. There's one right there.
Oh, yeah.
You see it?
Just up there in that, on the end of that branch.
Yeah. Having a nap? So they are here. Most people will walk past that and not see it.
We were right at the lower part of the ring road, in between the eco centre and the roundabout.
Snaps to record it.
Brad had his camera out to take some photos and noticed that it was actually a mother and Joey.
So sitting on mum's head. So all you can see is a little white bum with him sitting on mum's head. You'll find the koalas up here because they'll get to this point here, a car will go past, they'll freak out and they'll go straight up the trees. And so you'll often find them on the edge of roads, especially this one here. But when the cars are gone, and we've had it's been quite quiet here, they do tend to, they've gone much further. They've dispersed much further because there's a lot more freedom of movement.
So the animals seem to be moving more freely while we're away. But I want to give the final word to Professor Daryl Jones.
For a lot of people, it's just a bit of bush with a uni in the plonk in the middle of it, and they go to uni and then they go home. But that's an amazing place that surrounds them, and they, you know, there's so many other things they could see and learn about and really come to understand and love.
Thanks to David Whitfield for that report, and here's hoping we spot a koala as we leave today.
To finish the show, let's hear from an expert from an audio documentary produced with women from the Kunga Stopping Violence program in Alice Springs. The Kunga program works with women both inside and outside of prison to provide what's known as through care support. It's an Aboriginal run organisation that works intensely with women across the Northern Territory. Let's hear from some of those women to learn more.
I first met the Kunga Stopping Violence program while I was in prison. I learned to get my confidence back, started making friends.
When I was still at prison, I was doing course with Kunga Mob. They helped me to think through what I'm going to do when I get released. Trying to make myself better, trying to stop alcohol and ganja, because I always get into trouble in the same situations every time.
Learning how to control my anger and how to handle my families, even friends as well.
I feel nervous, yeah, a little bit excited to learn more about how to stop the violence.
It's just like teaching me how to do things proper way.
I got more ideas from Kunga program. I felt like I learned more.
When I was doing the Kunga program at the Alice Springs Correctional Center, I felt all right. I felt all right. And I was thinking straight about my kids, what I'm going to do.
Being in prison, it's hard. Being lonely, thinking about your family and your children. Kunga's coming into prison
teaching us how to be strong and how to control your anger.
You're going to try and change your life when you're doing this activity with Kungamop. Try and be healthy for your kids and be strong for your kids. Take care of your kids. Look after them. Stay away from trouble. Stop getting into trouble like fighting. Ending up in the same cycle, going round and round. It makes more easy for me to focus on my things, like what I'm going to do, because I don't want to do the same things making me ending up in the same situation. When I do the same mistakes, it is others keep ending up in the same situation, going back to the prison. And I don't want to do that because I like being outside with my kids.
You've been listening to an excerpt from a documentary produced with the women of the Kunga Stopping Violence program.
And that's it for the show. Thank you for joining us today on The Source News. I'm April.
And I'm Maddie. And you can catch all our recent stories on The Source News website at thesourcenews.com. Thanks for joining us again. We'll catch you next time.
Are we recording?
You're listening to
Source News
on 4EB Community Radio, presented by Griffith University students.